A transgender middle school student filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Elkhorn Area School District for denying her access to girls' restrooms. It's Tuesday, March 26th, and this is Wisconsin Today. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, Governor Tony Evers is expected to sign legislation allocating money to survivors of domestic abuse and sexual assault, but some communities say they might be left out. And Wisconsin school boards have been at the center of the culture wars in the last few years. Corrine Hess stops by to talk about upcoming school board elections. Stay with us.
You tune into Wisconsin Public Radio for news you can trust, conversations that draw you in, and music and entertainment that make your day better. The largest source of funding for everything you value on WPR is listener support. Join the team that makes WPR possible. Become a sustaining member. Make an ongoing monthly gift and share WPR with your entire community. It's easy to sign up at WPR.org.
A transgender middle school student has filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Elkhorn Area School District for denying her access to girls' restrooms for the last 2 years. The girl, known as Jane Doe, was allegedly forced to enter into a gender support plan after disclosing her gender identity to school officials in fall of 2022. That plan requires her to use faculty restrooms. Brian Jucumbs heads the Gay Straight Alliance for Safe Schools. He says every student should have a chance to succeed.
Forcing a trans girl to use a boys' bathroom puts her at risk for harassment and assault. And forcing her to use a single-stall restroom or other restroom that doesn't match who she is only makes her a greater target for bullying and harassment.
Superintendent Jason Tadlock says he cannot comment on pending litigation. According to the lawsuit, Elkhorn has 22 trans students, and all of them are reportedly required to use bathrooms that match their sex assigned at birth. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he now thinks former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman should be disbarred. As Anya Van Wagtendonk reports, Voss hired Gableman first before firing him.
Voss made the comments on WISN-TV's Upfront. He said that hiring Gableman to investigate the 2020 election is now a personal embarrassment.
I hope eventually he gets disbarred. He should not be an attorney. Anybody who thinks about hiring him, call me, because I will tell you what an awful decision that I made.
Voss hired Gableman in June of 2021 and fired him 14 months later. Gableman turned up no evidence of widespread wrongdoing in the 2020 election. He was sued for allegedly violating open records rules and racked up millions in legal fees. Voss did not move to decertify President Joe Biden's win in Wisconsin in 2020. He is now facing a recall effort in his district, in part because of that. Anya Van Wagtendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Earlier this month, state lawmakers approved new funding to help crime victim services. But some organizations serving marginalized communities worry the funding may not reach them. The state grants are a fix for an upcoming drop in federal funding. The legislation still awaits Governor Tony Evers' signature. Song Shong is executive director of Gia Shia. It's a Hmong community group that helps survivors of domestic abuse, sexual assault, and other crimes. She says her group will apply for the limited funds, but they're not sure what to expect.
We don't know what criteria they're using to decide what their funding priorities are.
Other organizations like Disability Rights Wisconsin say they do not qualify for the state grants. Starting this fall, they're expecting to have less than a third of the funding they've previously received. A stretch of Wisconsin's Interstate 90 will now be known as the Ho-Chunk World War II Code Talkers Memorial Highway. Governor Tony Evers signed a bill yesterday designating the highway. During World Wars I and II, Native Americans from more than 20 different tribes used their indigenous languages to share sensitive war secrets. Those efforts were key to the Allies winning World War II. The program was declassified in 1968, but remained largely a secret until 2001. Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer said it was a significant moment for both Ho-Chunk code talkers and for future generations to learn about their sacrifices. The bill also names the 14 Ho-Chunk code talkers the U.S. Department of Defense has officially recognized. A sweet potato chip brand that once appeared on Shark Tank is growing its production in southeastern Wisconsin. Joe Schultz has more on Jackson's Food Company.
Sweet potato chips swirl in a mixer where they are coated in seasonings at the Jackson's Chip plant in Muskego. The manufacturing facility began operations in 2022. Last year, it underwent a major expansion that more than tripled its production capacity. Each day, six 41,000-pound truckloads of sweet potatoes are converted into chips. James Marino is the company's CEO. He says that turnaround time is important for creating a quality product.
The sooner that we convert them into chips, the fresher the product we use, the better the chips that we're going to make. And so we really embrace that.
The company's founders, Megan and Scott Reamer, appeared on a 2017 episode of the show Shark Tank. The company has since grown and now controls its own manufacturing. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, school boards in Wisconsin have been at the center of the culture wars, especially in suburban Milwaukee. From high-profile controversies over efforts to remove books from school libraries and handling of LGBTQ issues, school board members have butt heads with district administrators. Coming up, I'll be chatting with WPR education reporter Corrine Hess about what's going on ahead of the April 2nd school board elections. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
For the last several years, school boards have been at the center of the culture wars, and on April 2nd, voters will be electing new school board members across the state. In a new story on WPR.org, Corrine Hess looked at how these issues have played out, especially in suburban Milwaukee. And she joins us now to talk about her reporting. Corrine, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Alex. Thank you.
First, let's start with some context, a little bit of background. What happened in Wisconsin school board elections last time around? That'd be in 2022, right?
Right. There was a lot of frustration coming out of COVID, and people were feeling different ways. So some parents were really happy with how schools handled it. Others didn't like it. Parents wanted their kids back in school. They didn't want their kids masked, and they didn't want vaccine mandates. So then we saw these school board candidates come out who kind of matched these same ideals, and they were elected. So then as COVID restrictions receded, we saw many of these school board candidates pick up other controversial issues like banning books or LGBTQ priorities. So that's where we're at now.
One of the things that you wrote about was the resignation of the school superintendent in Cudahy. Was there any friction there between the school board and the administrators?
So in January, the school board superintendent, Tina Owen Moore, wrote a two-page letter that kind of itemized her reasons for resigning. And the example there is pretty extreme. You know, she talked about how the school board had made it so that they weren't able to address things like bullying or other big issues because of the politics there. But I do think that it illustrates some of the tensions that have arisen in many of the school districts. Across southeastern Wisconsin, we have seen just all of this friction over, like I said, banning books, LGBTQ policies. And these school boards are technically nonpartisan, but political parties have gotten involved. Even though these people run as nonpartisan, they really are taking up partisan issues.
What kind of effect does that have across these school board landscapes? Because like you said, these are races that are typically nonpartisan, but like so many other things lately, it's really hard to be nonpartisan in today's day and age. What's that effect having on the school systems?
Well, it's made it really polarized. I spoke to Michael Ford. He's a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh who studies school board races. And he says that one of the reasons these culture war issues are so prominent is because political parties are more involved. Here he is talking about why he thinks that in the upcoming elections on April 2nd, it's going to be partisan again.
The previous election, like, it went from COVID to critical race theory to parental rights, and it's not totally coherent, but it is a culture message. I think that message is still very much there.
All right. So like we said, these are typically nonpartisan races. They're also very local, so we don't have any political polling to show us how voters are feeling about these races. That's where we rely on someone like you who's doing a lot of work and sourcing. So what are your sources telling you about how voters are feeling this time around?
Well, as you heard, Michael Ford believes that voters are still feeling connected to these culture war issues. But in talking to some other sources, they believe that at the top of voters' minds will also be some of these referenda issues. You know, statewide, there are more than 90 referendums on the ballot. Milwaukee has the big one, $252 million. So that will also affect how voters are thinking. You know, school boards and school districts are all thinking about financial issues. They've got to make tough choices. So I do think some voters will be thinking about that more than the culture war issues. So I guess, you know, it's up to them kind of to decide where their priorities are, if it's with the more culture war type issues or more of the finances.
Something we'll definitely be looking for in the data when it all comes out after the elections across the state. Corinne Hess, following it for us. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
And that'll do it for this Tuesday. Thanks for being here for Wisconsin Today. Our producer today, the one putting the show together behind the scenes, was Mallory Chang. Big thanks to her. We'll be back in your podcast feed tomorrow morning, so until then, stay safe, have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll talk to you again soon.